On this week's 51%, a woman takes her work against gun violence to another level.
Never before have we really heard from the most relatable and effective teachers, who are the individuals who commit crimes using illegal weapons.
Then we hear from a former Fortune 500 executive about women and transition. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
The gun draws and you know something's happening. Then darkness falls and cold, your heart beats rapidly. Be prepared because war is coming. You can't be scared now when these streets is calling.
Would the new method of murder be arson or firebombs? If the cost of a single bullet was more than the firearm. Strange, that is, when all exits are final.
We begin the show by bringing you another installment of the 51% segment called Force of Nature from Dr. Sharon Ufberg. She is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom. As a freelance journalist, she regularly blogs for the Huffington Post, and she lives in California's Napa Valley. This week, she interviews Jessica Mindich, a former lawyer and mother of two sons who, in January 2012, founded the Caliber Collection as a collaboration with then-mayor of Newark, New Jersey, Cory Booker, as a way to turn illegal and unwanted guns from city streets into jewelry. To date, Mindich has taken more than 1,000 illegal guns off the streets and raised some $100,000 for police departments in Newark, Hartford, Connecticut, the San Francisco Bay Area, and Detroit from the sale of her products to customers in more than 82 countries. The jewelry is made with the serial numbers from illegal guns and the metal from bullet casings taken off the streets. Mindich also created the Caliber Foundation, which aims to offer support to victims, families, and communities who have been affected by illegal gun violence. She is the founder of the Raise the Caliber Initiative, a national advocacy campaign to end illegal gun violence. Ufberg asked Mindich how the Caliber Collection came about.
I started this collection as a collaboration with Cory Booker. I really didn't know anything about the issue of illegal gun violence in America. Cory was really the person who shared all of that with me and then introduced me to the police director in Newark and the head of the ballistics lab who, over months, shared with me what was really going on with gun violence in America, in the toughest cities in America. And so the impetus was to fulfill a request of Cory's, which was to create a line of jewelry that would create a virtuous cycle to give back to gun buyback and amnesty programs to take guns and to sell the jewelry to get more guns off the streets. It was simple but profound.
I'm just wondering, as the founder and president of the Caliber Collection, if you could share a little bit more about your journey, you know, as a woman, a wife, a mother, how this idea has grown and expanded to so many other cities from your original Newark, New Jersey project. Talk a little bit with us about the projects that have evolved from this passion of yours to address the issue of gun violence in our country.
Sure. I think being a social entrepreneur, you either come to that calling as a career because you have experienced a loss in your life or you've witnessed an injustice going on in the world. I really didn't come to it, come to that career in that way. I came to it because I was raised in a family that in everything that I did, it was very clear that I had a duty to give back to the world. So I wanted to merge my family values with my desire to start my own company. And so I created a philanthropic jewelry company. I was honored that Cory Booker asked me to work with him, and that is why I got involved with him and with the city of Newark. I didn't know if I could sell a bracelet. I didn't know if I could message it right. I did everything and anything I could to learn and to create a jewelry collection called the Caliber Collection that was authentic to the people who walked the streets of Newark and the people who would buy this jewelry to support what was going on those streets. 16 days after launching the collection, Adam Lanza walked into Sandy Hook Elementary School and killed 20 students and 6 educators. And all of a sudden, the entire world, and I mean the world, understood that we had a problem with gun violence in America in a way that they never did before. Sandy Hook was not the largest mass homicide, sadly, to occur in this country. But for some reason, that day, made everyone sit up and look and listen, and they were devastated and didn't know how they could offer their support and how they could make sense of it. And here I had this company that was providing a symbol of hope and solidarity to people all over the world, and that is what sadly, I attribute to the success of the Caliber Collection, and talk about making lemonade out of lemons. We received calls from customers all over the world, media all over the world, and people were so thrilled to have some way to do something to help.
I think it is very inspirational when you actually wear a bracelet that has that the numbers of a gun that's been fought back. It makes people feel really connected to the cause and makes a statement that says, I'm also participating in trying to get illegal handguns off the street to stop the violence in our country. I know when we've talked before, you mentioned to me about a curriculum for young students that you were using as a way to actually continue your passion for helping people to have and raising the awareness. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. From the success of the Caliber Collection, I founded personally the Caliber Foundation. And then we've been very, very honored to receive grants from MTV and the Serena Williams Fund, as well as private donations. It's our hope as we continue down this journey of raising money to create the Raise the Caliber curriculum, which would be a groundbreaking curriculum because it presents the impact of legal guns from a perspective that's really never before been heard. It's from the perspective of the person behind the gun. We all know the story that's been told extensively from the victim's perspective and from advocates from both sides about the Second Amendment. But never before have we really heard from the most relatable and effective teachers who are the individuals who commit crimes using illegal weapons. And we're working with a producer from Dateline and going into prisons and talking to people who have committed crimes using illegal guns, and they have enormous, enormous remorse about a moment, a second in time that they can never undo and never take back, and that it is their utmost hope that they can share that perspective with at-risk youth and people on the streets who haven't yet pulled the trigger and stopped the violence. We're also working with former offenders who have been given a second chance and are out on the streets, and so there's an anti-recidivism component to this as well. And it's a really exciting project because very often we just group and vilify and assume a lot about people who have taken the life of another person and not understanding the circumstances in which they live in very tough circumstances in the inner cities of America, and to work with these people and understand that they have done something that they can never undo, but they have lost their own lives and now they're trying to do something, just anything, to help others is really inspirational.
Thank you so much. Jessica Mindich from the Caliber Collection and the Caliber Initiative and the Caliber Foundation. This is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Women in Transition, Reinventing Work and Life, introduces women to a new way of thinking about the events that shape their adult lives and offers a toolkit specifically designed for women in transition. Author Linda Rossetti, who has a Harvard MBA, tells her own transition story and the stories of a few hundred other women. She currently serves as managing director for Golden Seeds, LLC, an angel capital network that works with emerging female-led entrepreneurial businesses. I asked her what propelled her book, Women in Transition.
You know, I think there's two things that propelled the book, right? The first was really my own experience, right? I found myself kind of in my mid-40s for the first time not being able to answer some very fundamental questions, you know, what really mattered, what was ahead. I had had a storied background, you know, I have a Harvard MBA, I ran a tech startup that was venture capital backed, I was in the inner circle at a Fortune 500 company, right? I had all these incredibly wonderful opportunities, and yet I was in my mid-40s with two relatively young kids, with all that stuff happening around me, and really for the first time really not knowing which way to move. And at that moment, I chose to start talking with other women. And I was fascinated by what I heard. And what I heard was really a fair amount of qualifiers, I guess is the best way I would say it. You know, something was undone. You know, people were at home full time and kind of, you know, mildly apologizing to me for that decision, or they were, you know, managing a new issue of a parent with an illness, you know, in a distant geography, or all sorts of things. And so what brought me to it was my own experience, which was, you know, wrenching in and of itself. And it was kind of validated by what I heard nearly universally from other women, and it really brought me to this question of what is transition and what role is it playing for women today, and I was captivated by what I heard.
What is driving this? Why are we in transition, or why can women handle or not handle it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think there are a couple of things. First is, you know, transition is widely misunderstood in our society, right? That's the baseline, right? That we interchange the word change and transition repeatedly throughout the day. And what I realized, you know, I spoke with more than 200 women in writing this book, and what I found is that there's very little understanding to exactly what transition is. So there's that. And then there's also, because of the complexity of our lives, women who I did poll who had transitioned said that within the next 5 years they thought they'd transition again. So there's this bucket that says, I don't really understand this, or I'm not sure that people actually get that they don't understand it, but there's a low level of understanding of exactly what it is, and yet there's this probability or high frequency that it may happen repeatedly over the course of a woman's life. So I think that, you know, I chose to write the book to do two things. One is to increase the awareness and educate people on exactly what transition is, and then offer a set of tools, you know, should people be interested to pursue transition, that they'd have kind of a toolkit at their ready to help them kind of build up these skills that are candidly underdeveloped, because we don't talk about transition, you know, as much as perhaps we need to.
So let's talk about it, and we are talking about it. Then please define transition if it is ill understood.
So transition really is a process that requires us to re-examine our assumptions about identity, capacity, and values, right? So it really speaks to women asking themselves, you know, what holds value and meaning to them? And using that as a catalyst to really begin to test out on kind of an iterative basis, you know, what it is that they need to shape their identity to kind of be true to who they are. And I think ultimately, Allison, maybe you've found this in your life, that, you know, there's very clear standards that have been introduced to us, either explicitly or implicitly, and we all know what we should do. But when we really kind of have to look carefully at what, you know, dignify our own voices, the answers sometimes aren't as clear. And it speaks to how we all individually are going to define success, not kind of a homogenous, one kind of singular way to define success. And I think that, you know, increasing the skill sets for women to kind of embrace that, I think, is work that we should all get underway with.
Now, the 200 women that you interviewed for your book, they ran the gamut of what to what?
You know, all age groups, certainly, fascinatingly enough, you know, women that were expecting children, sometimes their first children, all the way to retirees, all sorts of careers and racial and ethnic backgrounds. I mean, really the gamut. And it was fascinating to me a few things, right? One is that although many of them, when they came in the room, would say, oh, you know, my transition is different. You know, mine was triggered by a job loss, or another one would say the birth of a child, or somebody else would say a remarriage, or a, you know, a retirement. And yet when I listened to them, even though each of them had this different catalyst, the fascinating thing was there was a very common pattern to each of the transitions, right? So that was just fascinating to me.
What was the commonality?
Well, the commonality is it actually occurred in kind of the same buckets, if you will. Transitions typically started with a trigger, and I've already mentioned a few, but it was a catalyst to begin a possible change for a woman. The second step is a decision. You know, what is a woman going to do with that moment, right? If there's a job loss, you know, what will actually happen at that moment? And the third step is really an action that's required. So regardless of what was the catalyst, what that initial trigger, the transitions happened in a repetitive pattern. They would go from trigger to decision to action. And you know, oftentimes the experience of a woman through those stages wasn't linear, right? It wasn't as if a trigger happened in the next 5 minutes they'd make a decision and then off they went to a transition. Oftentimes there was kind of a a cyclical pattern between a trigger and potentially making a decision and then, you know, hanging out for a little while and then another trigger happening. But in the end, when I evaluated all these transitions, it was fascinating to me how common this pattern was. And the most interesting thing, too, is without the knowledge of that pattern, women often misinterpreted the early signs of transition, right? So they would experience a trigger, right, be it a job loss or a divorce, and they would instantly have some emotions or feelings that really allowed them to conclude that, in fact, they had failed. And too often, women read that moment and disengaged or stalled or retreated from living the lives that they imagined. And in fact, once women were educated on the cycle, right, the process that would happen in transition and that framework, the three parts, they could understand transition as a potential for growth and could eliminate or neutralize those feelings of failure or negativity and really embrace it in a very positive, optimistic way.
Clearly, the book is Women in Transition, so we don't have to say it's about women. And you just said you interviewed 200 women, yet I'm still going to go ahead and ask, have you found this, because with your work experience, have you found this to be true among men, or is this handled differently?
I'm so happy you asked me that question, right? Because the reality is anyone can transition, right? Either gender can transition, men or women. What's different for women is that our response to transition is heavily influenced by how we're socialized, right? So for men, the same is true, right? How men are socialized really influences their response to transition. But what I found is that there are three components to how we're socialized that really, really impact how women respond at that moment when they're faced with a trigger and deciding what to do. And those things have to do with a woman's voice and how that develops as she's socialized. Also, our access to reliable support and recognition. And the final thing is our kind of our knowledge of ourselves within what is a male-normed environment, right? You know, oftentimes the standard, whether or not we know it kind of explicitly, is all kind of this male model. You know, if you're in the corporate world, it's a, you know, a 7x24 commitment, you know, to an outcome that's driven by, you know, an employer. And the role that standard plays in terms of setting expectations about what we should or could do really plays a factor in how we respond at that moment when a trigger says, ooh, maybe there's a transition for us. And our care roles only exacerbate that, right? Many women and a growing number of men, you know, hold care roles, and that can be for children, it can be for elders, it can be for others in our community, our siblings, for many. But, you know, those kind of things, right, our experience with all of that really influences how we respond. And that's what I think is gendered about transition, is how we respond in that moment and the things that we can bring to bear on, you know, the answers for us.
I'm hoping you can give a concrete example of a woman going through transition, how to handle that transition, what the environment is like. Kind of put a face to this and a story with it.
Well, can I be bold enough to start with myself?
Of course, I would
right?
love that.
You know, so look, I at 45, you know, found myself at a moment which was unlike anyone I had ever been in, right? I had two children under five, and I had, you know, been acclimated to work 6 days a week, you know, 60-plus hours a week, and I honestly could not continue in that vein, right? I was just at a point of absolute exhaustion. And I found myself incredibly embarrassed or ashamed for not being able to know the answer in that moment. And on top of that, I felt absolutely guilty for not working the 60 hours that all my successful peers were working. And yet, even with those emotions, which, you know, there were tons of them, I certainly felt like a failure at that moment. I felt like a failure professionally and felt like a failure as a parent. Amidst all of that, there was this kind of possibility that something more was available for me, right? So I had to kind of figure it out in that moment. And what I realized is that what was required was kind of an awareness of what transition could be, you know, some sight lines forward, but also a willingness to work through a process. And the process requires two major steps. One is to kind of envision what might be, right? Really work on kind of, you know, capacity. What could you do or could I do in that moment? And the second was really working on a series of steps that would help me validate what I envisioned. And all of that was very different from kind of the world that I had lived. And a woman that I worked with through designing the process said it best, I think. She said, you know, I ultimately realized that what I wanted for myself was enough. And she was somebody who came to transition after 17 years in a marketing role in a large corporation. And she had, you know, she had been rewarded throughout and yet was, you know, met with an unexpected job loss and really was in a free fall because of that. You know, so much of her identity had been kind of anchored to this, you know, this corporate success and, you know, her career. And you know, she's like, look, I cried for 6 months. It took me 6 months to tell my mother that I was out of a job. And she's like, you know, I had to realize that I wasn't this whiz-bang, you know, smart person I always thought I was. And yet, it took her many months to go through this process of kind of envisioning the future and working through steps to validate it, to ultimately say, look, what I want for myself is enough. And in fact, there's enormous energy and power there. And it worked, you know, I guess it worked famously for both of us.
So where did the transition lead you and her?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I found that transition really, once you open yourself up to transition, I think it's an ongoing process. But for me, you know, I started with figuring out, okay, well, I can start another company and figure out how to be both a parent and somebody who's engaged in my community and a professional. And so I my first instinct was to replicate something I had already done, right? I had been an entrepreneur, right? I loved running a small company that was ultimately acquired by a very large company, right? So it had been a successful kind of experience for me. So I said, oh, I need to start a company. So with that in mind, I started this process. And I ultimately found out that, in fact, that wasn't anything close to leveraging the things that held value and meaning for me. And where transition has brought me is really to be an advocate for women and women's issues. And what I hope to do with this book is really to position this book as a cornerstone to a much broader activity that will really work to increase the capacity for transition in women.
What happened with your marketing friend?
Sure. My marketing friend, she had, quite a long time that she had to spend experimenting with new opportunities, right? So she needed to replace income, and that was very important. So she secured herself a job, but understood that that job was not the end point of her transition. And she continued to work by crafting experiences that would allow her to help move herself in a direction. And so while she got herself a job, she also continued to do some volunteer activities. And those volunteer activities were very targeted at some things that were outside of marketing, but nonetheless things that were very important to her. And so she and her lifetime partner really were interested in cancer survivors, and they decided to establish a nonprofit that would help the families of those who support someone who is dealing with a diagnosis, or even someone who is, you know, hopefully beat the diagnosis. And so she started to do that in a small way while she had an interim job, if you will. And ultimately, as that nonprofit grew in terms of its abilities and its reach, she was able to switch that into being her full-time job. And ultimately now, you know, went from really directed by what she should do, and the folks around her in the professional environment telling her what's next for her, to a place where her full-time, you know, both her employment and her kind of emotional engagement is all about an area that is very important, not only for her and her partner, but for all the families that touch this nonprofit that they created.
That was Linda Rossetti, author of Women in Transition, Reinventing Work and Life. And that's Life on our show this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% Archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1373.